I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome
back.
What's up? All right. I got my boys here today. I got Brandon McGinley with the Post-Gazette. And I got Anthony Coghill. This is Brandon's hour. He's one of my favorite. He's the best columnist in America. And he's going to be sitting in that chair time and time and time again. And I love it. Take it away, brother.
Hey, Marty. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yep.
I mean, there's nothing else to talk about but the snow. And it's snowing again right now. And we have Anthony Coghill, my own city councilman, here with us to talk about the city's response and how this is a particularly difficult one, not just with the amount of snow, but with the temperature as well.
Yeah, and let me just start by saying I'm proud to be your first guest,
Brandon, and I agree with Marty. You are the best columnist around, and we look forward to getting you back in one way or another. But as to what you said, yes, this was a unusual snowfall. Anytime we have over a foot of snow, it becomes a very difficult task. I will say that the city was as prepared as they possibly could be. I feel like we won the battle to begin with, but the war is still raging.
Right. Yeah. Sunday was a different story than Monday. If you live in the city, you know what I mean. Sunday, there were plows everywhere. By the time we got to Monday, it was a totally different situation, and it started to pile back up again. So the question then is, this comes down to a question of resources. The city doesn't have the resources to do what it needs to do, especially when you get an unusual snowstorm. And last hour, we talked about how the city, one of the reasons is that it has money that it's put elsewhere. So we talked about the affordable housing bond. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm on the Equipment Leasing Authority Board, so I see the purchases that we make, and you're absolutely correct. Years and years of disinvestment, of neglect. The affordable housing bond you're speaking of, that was taken out under Mayor Ganey a couple of years ago. I was adamantly against it. I just felt like we should be putting that money, if we're going to take out a bond, put it into something that we really need. Don't get me wrong, affordable housing is a noble cause. Mm-hmm. But at the cost of a $62 million bond, right, where we're paying, of that $62 million, $32 million we're paying in interest.
That's the thing. That's the thing people don't realize. Oh, you hear you get a $62 million bond. That means you've got $62 million to put people in affordable housing. We're going to have half of that to spend, and half of it's going to be interest, because it was a high interest rate environment as well at the time. So, you know, you get a chance to take out money, and taking out bonds, that's the way municipal governance works. But you only get so many bites at the apple, because your credit rating is changed, your ability to get low interest rates has changed. And we chose to go for this kind of much more political and much less brass tacks move for our kind of our one bite at the apple over the past few years.
You're spot on about that, Brandon. And on top of that, that insult to injury, we were gifted over $300 million of federal money.
Yep.
We chose to put over $100 million of that into affordable housing as well. So not only did we put $100 million of money we could have purchased a whole new fleet with, we continued to invest in affordable housing. Again, I don't argue. It's needed. We
absolutely
love it. But when we're talking about cities' responsibilities, we're talking about basic services first.
Yeah.
And this is why we're having 37 trucks break down.
And it doesn't matter how much affordable housing you have if you can't get in your car and drive around the city. If you can't get to your house or leave your house, it doesn't matter how much affordable housing you have. And ultimately, a city can't be a city, A, if you can't get in and out of it, and B, if the focus is only on affordability. You needs to be affordability across the board. It needs to be affordability for middle class families, as well as folks who are in the kind of the 30-50% area median income. We could need that as well. But there was just such a laser focus on one particular kind that left and we have to ask, what are the results? I know the controller did a study of the Housing Opportunity Fund, and it was hard to say what the results have been.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, Brandon, you could ask any resident of the city of Pittsburgh what we've gotten from those investments, and they'd have a hard time showing you something visually or knowing something that came back as a residual to the city of Pittsburgh.
So instead of Monday morning quarterbacking the previous few years, I'm trying to think about going forward. Okay, we know the city just raised taxes because it doesn't have enough money. That is going to go into basic stuff. It's not enough to pay for a new fleet. It's not enough to invest for the future. That's just getting us back to a baseline of adequacy. What is a way to actually get some more money dedicated to the fleet? This is something I've advocated for, and I do think there's momentum for. When we talk about getting the big nonprofits to the table, UPMC, Highmark, Duquesne, CMU, and Pitt, the big five, there's a lot of hesitancy about putting money into the general fund. So what about a fund that is funded by the big nonprofits that is dedicated to investing in the fleet?
You know, Brandon, that's a good point. That's the direction we're moving in. I will tell you, under the leadership of this new mayor that we have, unlike Mayor Ganey, where we chose to, you know, take them to task and try to sue them and, you know, treat them like an enemy.
Yeah.
I think Mayor O'Connor is seeing that, number one, they want to help.
Yeah.
They want to be part of the solution. But when you're suing them, there's no choice, right?
Right.
But I will tell you, I've had extensive talks with Mayor O'Connor. Mm-hmm. I know firsthand he is working with them right now, in talks with them, hopefully to right-size our fleet. That just makes sense. Mm-hmm. It is our ambulances. It is our fire trucks, our first responders that are responding to the same patients that UPMC and Highmark and others have.
Well, that's the thing. And I think this is one of the reasons it should work, is that our universities and hospitals, they need clean roads too. So when you see like the videos that Marty has of, you know, Forbes Avenue being covered in snow and you can't get anywhere and it's blocking the entrances potentially for emergency vehicles, like it's not like UPMC is putting money into some mayoral pet project. It's going into the kind of thing from which the universities and the hospitals are actually benefiting. So I think it should be a pretty easy sell.
I think it's beneficial to both. It's beneficial to the nonprofits. It's beneficial to the city of Pittsburgh and all of our constituents. And I would say Councilwoman Barbara Warwick has a proposal that we held for 4 weeks just because we're going to work with the administration and see exactly what they come up with and their plan is. But it's to have a stream dedicated funding source strictly towards vehicles and our fleet. And you're correct. I don't blame UPMC, Highmark, and any of the nonprofits that they don't want money going into our general fund. Mm-hmm. We've proven to be irresponsible for that. So I wouldn't
blame
them.
Not me.
but if we did have a, you know, dedicated fund just for vehicles, I think they would be glad to do that. I'm confident that this administration's on it, and that's kind of the way of the future.
Right. So we have Brandon McGinley, who is an insanely talented columnist for the Post-Gazette. I love him. We have Anthony Coghill. They've got this whole hour, folks, and they're talking about what matters. By the way, Brandon, so if people know this, how many kids do you have?
We have 7 kids.
And they're stuck at home.
Here's the nice thing about living in the city. They could walk to the park.
It's true. It's true. And Anthony, it's embarrassing what's going on there right now on the streets.
As to the streets?
It's a crap show.
You know, Marty, this is a storm. You know, the real problem
It ain't
here,
that way in Mount Lebanon, sir.
I was in St. Clair, sir.
It ain't that way in the North Hills, sir.
I will say this.
It's Pittsburgh. We just suck.
I'll tell you this, Marty. My opinion is our public works crew did a phenomenal
job. Crushed it that first day, right?
I think that what we're seeing now is the snow that was plowed to the side and streets and driveways are blocked in, and it's become an emergency for people to get out of their own driveway.
Yeah. Brandon McGinley, Anthony Coghill, next, live.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We've got Brandon McGinley here from the Post-Gazette, filling in for Marty this hour, learning the ropes. And I'm here with my own city councilman, Anthony Coghill, who's here to talk about matters of Pittsburgh city politics, and especially the snow that fell, and that is still falling, unfortunately. and we're talking about how, you know, there should be buy-in from other parts of the city in terms of our nonprofit community and so on. And I think one thing that I think is really essential is getting not just, you know, we think of the city, life of the city, just in terms of the government, but you have your nonprofit sector, you have your corporate sector. And I feel like over the past several years, there just hasn't been the kind of working together that you need to get things done, not just, you know, coming up with ideas for more money to clear snow, but just for kind of leadership generally. Do you think that with Mayor O'Connor in office, we'll see more collaboration across sectors, not just like between this, you know, the city and its own bureaucracy, but with other civic leaders?
100%, Brandon. I know that Mayor O'Connor is in talks with the nonprofits as we speak as to right-sizing our fleet. I think that just makes sense. It was his idea. He campaigned on it. That just makes sense. It makes sense for the nonprofits. It makes sense for the city of Pittsburgh and its constituents that they put money into our fleet. I think they're more than willing to do it and want to do it. On top of that, we have a lot of foundations in the city of Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. unlike Atlanta's and Miami's. Yeah. We have a lot of old money here, you know. Foundation-based community that Pittsburgh is. And yes, tapping into them. I know my personal talks with the mayor, he's going to do that in many fronts and as many fronts as he can in order to help the city of Pittsburgh out because they want to help out.
Well, this is the thing. We talk about Pittsburgh as if it's kind of a poor city in the terms of the resources to do public services. And there's a lot of truth to that in the sense of, you know, the economy has been... Certainly the demography, the population has been stagnant, growing a little bit. But regionally, you know, we've actually been lapped by Detroit and Cleveland and Cincinnati over the past, since COVID especially. And yet it's also actually quite a rich city in terms of just the amount of resources that are out there, especially institutional resources. And for reasons that are complicated and I haven't fully understood yet, we've actually had a really hard time getting all of these institutions to row in the same direction.
You know, it really comes down to communicating, Brandon.
Yeah.
You know, our Mayor Ganey, like him or dislike him, did not do a very good job at that.
Yeah.
You know, when you decide to take on the biggest nonprofits in the city, certainly, if not in the world, and take them to task and try to sue them and try to make them pay up,
right.
pay their fair share, as they say, I don't think that's the right approach. I think we need to treat them like partners. They are partners. Yep. They're based in the city of Pittsburgh. They live here. Their workers live here. We have to start treating them like partners. I believe Mayor O'Connor is going down the right path.
And I will say, I think the ball's in their court now, though, because you know you went through Lou Gravenstahl sued UPMC, and then Bill Peduta said this wasn't working, mm-hmm. and then Ed Ganey started suing UPMC, but in an even less effective way, going after individual properties. I mean, they sued over, or they challenged the nonprofit status of Children's Hospital. Like, this was the kind of thing that was going on. It was very scattershot, and it didn't have any real positive effect. But the ball is in the court now, I think, of the UPMCs and the Highmarks, because they've got through all of that, and now they need to get their own act together, in my view, because one of the things that we hear is that they'll all say, we're on board, we'll totally do it, but they need to be on board too. And at a level that is mutually agreeable. And this is where mayoral leadership, I think, is essential, because if left to their own devices, they can keep playing these games for decades. But somebody needs to get them in a room together and say, this is where we're going to nail down a solution right now.
Yep. You're correct. I've spoken to the big nonprofits myself, and you're right. One doesn't want to go without the other one on board.
Yeah.
This mayor is going to get them all on board, I believe. And you're right, the ball's going to be in their court. I think the city is now treating them like a partner versus an enemy of some sort, like the past administrations have. And let me just say, it has not been fruitful trying to take them to court. It has cost us more money than we've gotten.
That's true.
So,
yeah, cost us more money in legal fees, and that's not even counting the time of our lawyers. That's just the outside legal fees that it cost us more than we got in taxes. I mean, it's what it's. I remember when I was working on this issue at the PG, and it was I would be in my office just laughing because it was so and the challenges that they were making against, you know, buildings like Children's Hospital. I couldn't believe it. I triple checked just to make sure, but it just it was amateur hour. Yeah.
The only thing that we were able to get residual from tax, the nonprofits paying taxes on, were a couple of parking lots.
Yeah,
and that's
yes.
it. You know, their attorneys are very good at what they do. We're through fighting them. I believe, you know, the next few years will show that having a cooperative, you know, relationship with the nonprofits is going to be very fruitful for the city of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm hopeful as well. I think that's where we're going. I think that's where we're going. And I'd like to see, you mentioned foundations. You know, traditionally Pittsburgh has one of the most civically active corporate communities in America, and that has changed just structurally because all the big companies are now basically global companies. And you know, I don't want to pick on anybody in particular, but it's just it's the nature of the economy now. So to the extent that we can bring the companies that have their names on the tall buildings downtown and lots of others that are huge companies that fly under the radar, to the extent that they can be brought to the table and whether it's by the mayor. And I think the county executive has a role to play here as well. I mean, I know that Sarah Enamorato, you know, she campaigned as a very left-wing candidate, but her actual administration has been much more pragmatic. And we have two really young leaders right now. In Corey and Sarah, it seems like there should be potential for the kind of city-county cooperation that has also, you know, been a difficulty for a long time.
Yeah, that's a good point, Brandon. I will tell you, I didn't know what to make of Sarah Enamorato when she first came into office, but I'll tell you, I'm very impressed with her leadership ability.
I almost never have a conversation with somebody who says, oh, right. Yeah, she's been a total disaster.
Yeah.
Like and even the tax increase, I thought was handled in a way that was effective and responsible.
No, absolutely. I think she's doing a really good job. I think she's going to be the county executive for providing she wants to be for years to come. And I do believe that she and our mayor have a really good relationship. In fact, I know they have a really good relationship. And you're right. Putting those two heads together, those two leaders together, and dealing whether it's with the corporate world, the nonprofit world, in the city of Pittsburgh, is going to prove to be very fruitful for us.
I don't think it's Sarah's like natural instinct to go out and court big companies to come to the city, and that's fine. But I think it could be Corey's.
Oh yeah,
they can complement each other.
There is no question that is on Corey's mind.
You know,
he wants to attract development. He wants to attract business. And let's face it, any major city, you need the population to grow. We need thriving businesses. Most of all, they need to be safe and clean. And that's going to be his number one priority. So
yeah, no, and that's I mean, you know, this is what today's, you know, conversation after the snow is all about. You know, it is hard in a city of 300,000 people with several thousand miles of roads. What is it? How many miles of roads do they have to do? It's a lot.
A lot.
It's not several thousand, but it's a lot of miles of roads and very hilly terrain. It is a hard task, but it's even harder when the equipment is supposed to do it's breaking down. So we'll keep going on this after the break.
Yep.
Sounds good, Marty. I appreciate
Brandon McGinley and Anthony Coghill next, brothers and sisters, live.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Brandon McGinley from the Post-Gazette, filling in for Marty this hour. And I have with me Anthony Coghill, Pittsburgh City Councilman from the South Hills. And I want to talk about, we talked a lot about government, we talked about all the big institutions, but I want to talk about neighbors helping neighbors, because that's the Pittsburgh way. It is, you know, as much of a hassle as the snow can be, it does give people an opportunity to go out and do something that's community-oriented. And one of the things the city offers is the Snow Angels program. And I heard, 150 new signups? You know, it sounds like it's really picking up. So can you tell us more?
Yeah. No, this Snow Angels has been very, very successful. And again, it sheds light on the people of Pittsburgh as to who we are. I was actually out on Snow Angel calls yesterday myself in coordination with the command center that Mayor O'Connor set up.
Great.
They would be contacting me because they know I have four-wheel drive. The problem was a lot of snow angels couldn't get to their jobs yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
You almost had to walk. But so I was getting snow angel reports or requests, and I would go there with a couple of my roofing crew, and we would just help them out, dig them out. And, you know, it's really inspiring, Brandon. I mean, it's not only the city of Pittsburgh providing that service, but, you know, neighbors would come. I would get a call for somebody that needed dug out, an elderly person, and needed to get to the doctors and needed really just to break the ice between the end of the driveway and the roadway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And dig their car out, actually. And so we did a lot of that yesterday, but I would get to some of the calls and it would be like, oh, my neighbor just did it or my neighbors just did it. So I saw our firefighters were out there in force digging people out.
Yep.
Neighbors were helping. And, of course, there was armies of kids going around, which, you know, endless amount of
I know about armies of kids.
So, that's where I would have been if I were 12 or 13 years old, making money.
That's great. Yeah. No, that's something that, I mean, it's a classic, you know, rite of passage for kids. And I love that the city offers this opportunity, and I love that it gives kids an opportunity to get out there and do a little, you know, entrepreneurship and stretch their muscles. And I know, you know, my 10-year-old was asking about starting to do it, because in the past he's been, I said, hey, why don't you go out, you know, knocking doors. He doesn't, the work, I don't know if the work, I think he'd get into it. The thing that makes him nervous, and I get it, because I was that way when I was his age, is the knocking on doors. Yeah. It's the you know, greeting a stranger and not being sure how to talk to them.
Right. Well, tell him not to be afraid of that, Brandon, because I will tell you, people welcome you open arms when they see a shovel in your hands yesterday, I will tell you. So people were trying to flag me down and flag these kids down, and it almost comes to you. You almost don't even have to hustle for it. It is great exercise, I will tell you. I was out for about 8 hours yesterday and feeling it today. But no, you know, and even through our command center, we could help kids. If there are kids out there, little entrepreneurs that are willing to, you know, shovel a walk for $20 or whatever, you know, that could be part of the Snow Angels program. Not that it's for free through the city services, but, you know, get them in contact and hooked up with the kids that are willing to go out there and hustle and
that's
make
great.
A few bucks.
No, that's great. That's great. I mean, I think, you know, I've long said that for all, and we could talk about PPS, and I'm sure we will talk about PPS at some point. We could talk about the lack of resources, but I still think that there is especially this time of year, there's something special about kids in the city. and having those opportunities to serve their neighbors and to get out there. You know, speaking of school, by the way, I really don't like when they say that there's too much snow to go to school, but we're going to make you learn from home. I mean, one of the best things growing up was having a snow day where you could go out and enjoy yourself. And man, I just, and it, we know from during COVID that it doesn't work. Like the remote schooling for like, you put, this is something I talk with colleagues all the time. You know, we're going to put your 5-year-old in front of a screen to learn your ABCs when it's too snowy, or, you know, in PPS in the summer, it's too hot or whatever. And we know it doesn't work. It takes something away from kids that is like one of the best memory making things you can have, a great snow day. And it puts parents in a bad situation because they often have to go to work. And I'm just ranting at this point. But I mean, what do you think?
Brandon, I couldn't agree more with you. You know, I'm one that really hasn't adapted to the modern digital world. We had our online meeting this morning for city council. I skipped out on. I just don't feel it's as, you know, fruitful. Now, if there's an important vote, I get on.
Sure.
But, you know, I need to be in person. And to what you said about kids, you know, really, I think there's more education sending them outside playing with their friends and digging, making igloos and sled riding.
Oh, yeah.
Social, you know, it's socially, they need that in their lives.
Yeah.
And to be stuck behind a computer at home all day when you could be out, you know, making forts and,
No, that's it. So we homeschool. And so we were able to, we still did some school during the day. But my son came back last night after dark and he had gone down to Brookline Park and he told me all about, it wasn't just a fort. It's like a whole like World War One fortification system with watchtowers and trenches,
and tunnels, then all kind of crazy.
Yeah. And he said it was in case any girls showed up so that they could pummel them, you know, classic. And then he and his buddies walked up the boulevard to Fox's Pizza, and they got a big pepperoni pizza, you know, and that's the kind of thing that I think it's a part of growing up. It's a part of education, and it's kind of thing that just it can't be taught in any other way than experiencing it.
That social interaction is so valuable.
Yeah.
I believe more so than sitting behind a computer learning your, you know, whether it's math or anything else.
Yeah.
That day, that to me is most important, and I think that's what kids lack today, right? You know, my wife or my girlfriend of 30 years, Lisa, and I, mm-hmm. we laugh all the time. We'll call a restaurant, and they don't even use their name when they, you know, the younger kids.
Sure.
You know, I mean, the social skills, I feel, have gone to pot because of the, you know, the media and digital
age. Oh, yeah. Oh, a lot of our friends, we had a landline for a while, and it stopped working, and we're going to try to get it started up again. But almost all of our friends have landlines, and so the kids can just, you don't have to worry about them being on their phones and doing who knows what. They can just literally pick up the phone and call their friends. And so, you know, they're learning classic phone etiquette. And I mean, I grew up with the classic millennial phone anxiety. And I kind of had to get over it when I took the job at the Post Gazette because I'm on the phone all the time now. But I love seeing kids who don't have that because it's just normal to them.
What I lack in computer skills, I make up tenfold in phone skills and one-on-one skills. When I started my business 30 years ago, it was all about the phone.
Yeah.
You better have good phone skills.
Yeah.
So, and today it's missing. And good phone skills are really good personal skills,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's just a matter of introducing yourself, telling the person who you are. We're always aghast when we call a restaurant, try to make reservations, and the young man or woman, they don't even give us their name. You know,
right,
they're like, hello?
Right,
and I'm like,
right, yes.
Like, hello?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, the digitalization of everything, I think has obviously there's some benefits in terms of communication and networking and everything, but at the end of the day, I think it's mostly been a disaster. and especially for young people, and the idea that you can learn anything worthwhile over a screen on a snow day when you could learn so much more about what it actually means to be a kid outside is to be just yeah, beyond stupid.
No, that interaction with other people,
yeah,
it's just invaluable. I mean,
yeah.
You know, you see it everywhere today. I couldn't agree with you more. It's,
yeah.
You know, my children, if I had young children today, they would be out in that snowstorm, I would tell you. I'd put a cardboard cutout maybe of them in front of that computer.
Yeah, exactly.
They would be playing hooky.
Yeah, exactly. No, I, yeah, there's no replacement for it. It's some of the best memories we have. And just getting the kids out there, enjoying it, making the city a place that's vibrant, because there's nothing more vibrant than seeing kids playing, whether it's in the snow or in the summertime. There's nothing better. We got to see more of it. We'll be back in a little bit with more with Anthony Coghill.
It's true, though.
Hey, welcome back. This is Brandon McGinley from the Post-Gazette filling in for Marty this hour. He handed me the mic, and well, it's up to you guys whether you think it worked out or not.
But. Yeah, baby.
But I still have Anthony Coghill from Pittsburgh South Hill, city councilman. And we've solved the problem of the plowing long term because we figured out that the UPMC and everyone's going to pay for it. If everyone can get their act together. But what about in the short term? We have a nearly, not unprecedented, but a very unusual situation. We got about a foot of snow, and now it's going to be below freezing for at least 2 weeks. So it's not going anywhere. What do you see as the challenge now for the city dealing with snow that's not going to melt?
Okay, so let me start by correcting you. We have over 18 inches of snow in my district. So,
wow.
Yeah. When the plows come down the street, which they've done a phenomenal job.
Yep.
I felt the leadership there. Everything was really good. Get their streets clear. There's still a lot of back roads we got to do. That's number one. Getting the back streets, side streets, so our public safety responders can get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Second biggest problem for me is when those plows go down the street, it has now formed 4 or 5 foot high ice barricades,
yes,
basically, between people's driveways and the main roads,
yes,
just for them to get out on. Not to mention their car is completely buried.
That was me last night.
Yeah.
I went out, I thought it'd be 30 minutes, and took me over 2 hours to dig out two cars. And even then, one of them, I'm still not sure can get out.
Right. So that's the next challenge, right? And again, the temperatures, as you stated, have not been cooperating,
right,
because this snow is not going to go anywhere. Typically, the best thing we could have is that big fireball in the sky and 35 degrees, and then it's very treatable and it's very manageable.
Yeah.
But being that this snow is not, this ice and this snow that's been built up isn't going anywhere for, looks like weeks at this point.
Yes, weeks,
Which is the toughest problem. So the mayor has declared a state of emergency. Mm-hmm. He's got 50-plus contractors out there now, starting with the business districts and downtown. You know, little bobcats and dump trucks. We have to move it now.
Yeah.
So, because there's nowhere to put it.
Right. Yeah. You literally have to pick up the snow and dump it because Mother Nature's not going to do her job. Yeah.
That's right. So that's the biggest challenge right now.
Yeah.
Finishing the other streets, which, again, once we don't get to them for 1 or 2 days, which was almost impossible to do, mm-hmm, considering the amount of snowfall we had. But what happens is they become hard, compact, and icy.
Yeah.
So plows are almost ineffective on these streets as well.
Right.
You got to dump a ton of salt on them and, you know, just get by and hopefully that sun comes out.
I have a salt question for you, which I wasn't planning on asking.
Yeah, sure.
But I know that some salt is ineffective below 20, 25 degrees, and we are going to be below 20, 25 degrees. Do we have the salt that will be effective at these temperatures?
I would have that answer for you. I used to be the chairman of public works.
Okay,
I am
in
public safety now, but that's a good question.
I had heard that under Peduto there was a policy that we'd never buy the cheap salt because even though it was cheaper, if you run into a situation like this, it's ineffective. But I will say that what I see out there looks like rock salt.
Yep.
And rock salt is not great when it's super cold.
I agree. You're probably correct. I don't know the amounts or the supplies that we have in each.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, rock salt still gives you traction.
Yes.
You know?
I was thinking
it may not melt it as quickly, but, I always say we don't want to save money on salt. You know, we want to gauge it, make sure we don't run out, but you know, we don't want to save money on salt. So dump salt all over these icy roads, because that's what they are. They're ice now at this point, some of the back roads that we didn't get to initially. So main roads, I feel like we did a fantastic job on. Roads coming up and into our neighborhoods, fantastic job.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of side streets that need done, and it's the ice barricades that have formed through all the plowing.
I know there's lots of places in the city where the plows haven't gotten to, where the snow has built up again, where there have been piles of snow that have fallen into the streets. I understand that. I know from my experience, it has been we saw so many more public works vehicles during this storm than we saw during a storm half its size in December. So, you know, that's what I've seen in the neighborhood you represent. And but I also know that, you know, it's there's a lot of streets out there.
Yeah.
But so it sounds like, though, we now are literally having to pick up the snow and just carry it out with front loaders.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nowhere to put it. As you know, a lot of these streets are skinny, tight, cars all over the place. You know, the plows can't, they could plow it off the street, but they can't plow it off this, you know, the barricade that they create.
Right.
You know, so it needs to be physically removed by these contractors. We don't have the resources to remove all
this. I hope everybody is used to seeing the snow, because you're going to have to really get used to it over the next 2 weeks or so. Unfortunately, it's going to go from white and pristine to, you know, exhaust coated and ugly, and that's when it's going to get really unfortunate. But and hopefully there won't be much more to come. Marty, thanks for handing me the mic this hour.
Wow, you guys are good, man.
We've had many conversations in the past.
I can tell.
No, this is fun. This is fun. I really appreciate it.
And we got Mike McCarthy coming up live next.
Right.
Are you cool with this? I'm cool with him. Aren't you?
Oh, yeah. No, I can't wait. I love the hometown guy, Greenfield guy. Yeah, I love
it. Same here. We wish him the best. Yep. Brandon, you're the man. He will be back. So will Anthony. Peace out.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.